Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. Many thought they would never see the day when marijuana is legal to use for recreational purposes here in Pennsylvania. Well, that day still may be a long way off because there continues to be a strong opposition to the state legislature. But when Governor Tom Wolf came out in support of legalized pot a few weeks ago, it was the first time a sitting governor had done so. The governor's support came after Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman ended his tour of all 67 counties and found the majority of the people who showed up at town hall-style meetings favored legalization. Lieutenant Governor Fetterman joins us on today's program. Governor Fetterman, welcome to the program.
It's always a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me on again.
If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or comment on WITF's Facebook page. On Twitter, we are at Smart Talk WITF. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Now, before we get into our conversation with the Lieutenant Governor, I wanted to mention that we invited several people who have voiced their opposition to legalization to appear on the program, including Republican legislators, and none agreed to come on the program today. Some who did agree, and I'm not talking about legislators, but other organizations, some who did agree to come on the program are up for election in just a few weeks and just didn't think that it would be fair to have those candidates on the program. So we'll have the Lieutenant Governor on today, and I'll ask some of the questions that those opponents do have about legalizing marijuana. Lieutenant Governor Fetterman, last time you were here, and this was back in the spring, you had just started your tour of the state. You gave us an update as to what you had heard already, but the tour ended in May, all 67 counties. What you heard was that the majority of Pennsylvanians who showed up at those meetings supported legalization. What were your observations?
My observations were, one, that Pennsylvania is ready and wants a civil debate on cannabis in Pennsylvania, whether they're pro or con. And that is undeniable. We had over 10,000 people show up for our events across Pennsylvania. And we had over 40,000 comments to the website that we set up in order to accept feedback. And that doesn't count the tens of thousands of social media interactions and so forth. So people really want to talk about it. This is something that voters thinks a critical issue. And it was done uniformly in a very civil manner in these town hall sessions. And people, I think, genuinely appreciated the democratic experience, not the party, the democracy aspect of it, to being able to talk about an issue in a room full of people that may or may not share your views. And it's a conversation that I think Pennsylvania wants to continue. And as you alluded to earlier, there's opposing views. And this tour was the most comprehensive means to have that conversation, short of a ballot initiative, which the Constitution of Pennsylvania doesn't permit. That's why we did it.
What was the percentage of people who supported legalization?
I would estimate it north of 60% to mid 60s overall in Pennsylvania, and of that, there isn't, I would say, somewhere in the 15 to 20% in terms of hardcore opposition. Like, no. Otherwise, there's a lot of, well, I'm not necessarily there, but I think this is going to happen, and these other states are doing it, et cetera, et cetera. So, and we discovered a lot of things that have overwhelming support, and they would be in the decriminalization space, which I would note that the Pennsylvania District Attorney's Association supports. Expungement through legislation of smaller cannabis convictions. And really, virtually unanimous support for having it removed from Schedule One. That is this idea that it belongs in the same basket of other drugs like heroin and meth and these others. Nobody, even the most staunchest prohibitionist, believes that that's accurate.
But that's a federal thing. That would
Correct.
Have to be done on the federal level, and that
Correct.
Doesn't seem to be happening anytime soon.
Well, but see, it could happen very soon because 2020 coming up, and I think if the Democrats do prevail, I think that's something that would actually.
But it didn't happen under the Obama administration. Why would it happen under another Democrat?
We've had a sea change in political landscapes and views. I would remind your listeners that support for same-sex marriage was a controversial topic in the 2012 re-election campaign of Barack Obama. And you look back now and you can scarcely believe that that's true. It's become such a, as it always should have been true. But that being said, things have changed in a dramatic fashion, and nobody could have foreseen just how drastically what's changed since the 2016 result.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the criticisms of your tour, and I don't want to go back to the mm-hmm. spring. I want to talk mostly about what the future looks like for legalization of marijuana. But, you know, one of the criticisms was that there would be people who were most passionate about legalization who would show up and show their support
for this. I would say that's true. But then there would also be people that are most passionate against it that are going to show up and voice their voice. And that criticism might be more valid if we only went to like the blue counties where we knew, you know, where, but we would go to these deep red counties and have this conversation and invite everybody. And I would personally call the state reps and their state senators and say, I want you to come and I want you to have the floor to share your views. That was of everybody. And some took me up on it and some didn't. And the some that were the biggest critics were the ones that didn't come for whatever reason. And they have the courage or they just didn't want to partake. And, you know, like in Franklin County, they missed a great conversation. Over 250 residents showed up and they missed a great opportunity to talk with their constituents on this subject. And, you know, like, what are you afraid of? Why are you afraid of an elected official having a conversation with your constituents?
Were there counties that opposed it overall?
Yeah, there were. There were some that, and there were some where representatives like Chris Dush tried to pack the room with you know, like prohibitionists, and including even his own mother. He brought to one and didn't even identify her as his mother. Had her sit in a different part of the room, and just these kind of, you know, sophomoric attempts and to say, like, I would just respond by saying, well, she is a constituent, and it wouldn't surprise me that she might oppose that. But her voice was still welcome at these kind of meetings. It doesn't have to be like a confrontation. You know, there wasn't a foregone conclusion. We never made any attempt to steer the room into a direction or kind of, you know, invite a group of people that would be more favorable to a certain position. It just didn't happen. The protocol was the same standard across every 67 counties.
But you did go in supporting legalization. When you came back, you probably sat down with Governor Wolf. Mm-hmm. Filed a report, but sat down with Governor Wolf and had a conversation about this. What was that conversation like? What kind of questions did the governor have?
The governor is just always ahead of his time. You know, the governor understands that this is a conversation that Pennsylvanians wanted to have. And you know, he's the one that asked me to take this tour, and it was an honor to do so. And he had a lot of thoughtful questions about what people think, and both on the pro and the con side. And he is just an enormously bright guy. I mean, I don't know how else to say it. He would bring up a lot of these issues and talk about it in a way that really makes a lot of sense.
Did you have to convince him?
No, not at all. Like, you know, this was, you know, neither one of us had this idea that this was going to be a slam dunk before we undertook this. We just decided that this is a conversation that Pennsylvanians need to have, particularly if you look at the ring of cannabis that is beginning to kind of emerge around the state geographically. It's something that we needed to undertake, and we did. And we did it in the most objective, broad-based way that I can think of. And if there's a critic out there, well, then what should we have done differently? Because I don't know if by going to all 67 counties and having come one, come all, including online, isn't sufficient. I'm not sure what is.
Now, most polls have shown a majority of Pennsylvanians do support legalization, and most of the polls I've seen kind of follow along or consistent with what you said, about 60%. The governor has come out now and said that he supports it. The attorney general has come out and said that he supports it. Legislation introduced just recently, of course, this isn't the first time, but legislation introduced that make marijuana legal. Under normal circumstances, with all those things, it would seem to mean that this piece of legislation or this was going to happen. But there also is strong opposition, as I mentioned, from Republican leaders and organizations nationally like the American Lung Association. They're not just looking at Pennsylvania, but they've come out in opposition for legalization of marijuana. American Lung Association, Centers for Disease Control, and the National Institute on Drug Abuse. Those opponents say you're talking about people's health and safety. This isn't a slam dunk. I know you may have described it that way, but it is not a slam dunk because you're talking about people's health and safety.
Well, of course what specific item isn't about people's health and safety when you get down to it, whether it's sugar, whether it's...
Sugar's a lot different than smoking dope.
But it's this idea that legality implies harmless is a false argument. So like somehow if you make it legal, that is somehow saying it's okay, go do whatever you want with it. And that's just, that's ridiculous. The governor and I believe strongly, and this is one of the things that I hear the governor constantly refer to, is that by making it legal, we can deliver the safest product possible. We can get it out of the shadows. We can get it out of the black market. We can make sure it's tested and pure, and consumers will know exactly what they get, as opposed to right now, like who knows what they're getting. So this idea that you are somehow going to open the floodgates is specious. It's the idea of there's already a market. Let's make the market safe. Let's bring it out in the open, and let's tax it and regulate it and control the access. I heard time and time again from young people, it's a lot easier to get illegal weed than it is legal alcohol in their circles. And they're like, I could come back in 10 minutes with weed for you, but a bottle of Jack Daniels, no, I couldn't, you know? So, again, opponents often try to conflate suggesting that legal, that you are implying that it's harmless and it should be a free-for-all. That's, nothing could be more disingenuous about that.
There may be people who do imply that, but the bottom line is, I mean, the reality of it is that if it is legal, there are more people who are willing to use it. Because like right now, there are people who won't use it because it is illegal. But if it is legal, you may have more people that will try it. Also, something else, and Colorado has been, kind of the test case, because marijuana has been legalized for recreational purposes in Colorado for the last 5 years now. When you mentioned the black market, one of the things that Colorado did find is that there are still people who are buying marijuana on the black market because it's cheaper than what they would pay at, you know, something that is run by the state.
Well, the thing is that it is critical, and we talked about this yesterday in New York. In fact, there was the cannabis czar from
California. If you would, take a step back. What did you talk about in New York?
It was a cannabis summit, and Colorado's cannabis czar was actually there talking about this. So he was incredibly knowledgeable. And striking the optimal balance of taxes on cannabis is critical to suffocate the black market, because you have to strike that balance between generating sufficient revenue but also suffocating the black market trade. And this idea, like I would just push back and say, well, you know, are you going to brew your gin in a bathtub cheaper? You could probably brew your gin cheaper in your bathtub. Or do you want to go to a store and buy a bottle of Bombay or whatever? And this idea that you're going to, if there's a difference in price, go to the black market where you don't know what pesticides, where it is, you know, all these other, you know, unsavory aspects versus pure legal you know, like it's like, sure, you might, there might be some people, but there's a lot of lessons out there now in Colorado and other states. And we actually did talk about what's the optimal kind of tax rate on cannabis.
What is optimal?
They talked around in the upper teens to around 20%. I believe Seattle has a rate, excuse me, Washington has a rate well in excess of that. And that's calibrating the right rate is critical to making sure that you hit the equilibrium of maximal revenue and minimal black market distortion.
But I want to get back to what I originally said. You said that the Canadian czar was there.
Colorado.
You said Canadian, but
did I?
Well, yeah,
well then
yeah.
I apologize.
Which
it was
where
the
it is
Colorado,
legal, where it Colorado, is legal yeah. in Canada as well, but Colorado. So, but Colorado, he actually talked about the black market.
Correct. Yeah, it was a great conversation, and there were a lot of lessons that Colorado has learned, Pennsylvania isn't flying blind in this market, and I would applaud. Let me take this opportunity to applaud our Republican colleagues on the job that they helped bring medical cannabis to. You know, it's considered one of the gold standards of that legislation across the country. So there's already a history of this in Pennsylvania. So there's a lot of other cases. And no one talks about Alaska. It's illegal in Alaska, too. And the last time I checked, that's not exactly a blue bastion of Berkeley liberalism. this notion that cannabis prohibition is only supported. It's Republicans too. They're, you know, the Cato Institute, Grover Norquist, who's not exactly a cuddly.
He's
you know,
a libertarian.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And we saw that time and time again. There's a strong libertarian streak in the conservative side that says you have no damn business telling me what I can do in the privacy and safety of my own home. So this idea that there's a strong contingent of that in the Republican Party.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. I want to remind you of an event that we have coming up next week here at the Public Media Center. WITF, in partnership with State Impact Pennsylvania, will host a local retro report discussion from invasive species to the TMI shutdown. Some of Pennsylvania's top environmental headlines have roots in historical events. Join me next Wednesday, October 23rd, from 6 to 7:30 p.m. at the WITF Public Media Center as I host a retro report screening and panel discussion. We'll talk about climate change, invasive species, water quality, and more. Register to attend at WITF.org/events. On today's program, we're joined by Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman and talking about the legalization of marijuana in Pennsylvania for recreational purposes. And I will add again that we did invite opponents to this, people who have talked about it publicly before, but declined to appear on the program. Some who did agree to appear on the program face re-election in just a few weeks, so decided that that probably wasn't a fair thing to do. But we'll bring up a lot of, really, this is about you. I'd like to hear from you as well, what you think about legalizing marijuana here in Pennsylvania. 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Let's take a call from Kenny in York. Kenny, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I really just had a comment about going back to what the Lieutenant Governor said about the black market. And you know how we have in the news all these vaping homes and how they're saying that largely they're connected to these illegal THC cartridges that they're finding are cut with all these illicit chemicals. They're not pure THC like you'd find in a dispensary. And I think really one of the best ways that we could probably combat that is legalizing the market. Because then obviously you have regulations and all that. Like you won't find, you know, those illegal parts in the dispensary.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your call. Kenny, is talking about the vaping issue, and let's face it, over the last few weeks, we've heard day after day about deaths being caused, people getting sick, going to the hospital. One of the things we hear, especially from the vaping industry, is said that, well, there are high concentrations of THC. That's one of the issues. THC, well, that's, you know, that there are...
It's synthetic THC.
Okay.
And that's a huge difference because these compounds are illegal. And they are dangerous and they're unknown. They are not botanically based. They are synthetic compounds. And they are produced outside the country, and there's no control, there's no testing, there's no anything. I mean, if you're going to put something in your lungs, you need to be really sure that it's as pure and as safe as it possibly can be.
All right, and well, can I refer just for a second? Because what I want to do is say what you just said. That's why some people oppose legalizing marijuana for recreational purposes.
But that's the strongest case for legalizing it in that it's like get it out of the shadows and have things tightly regulated. You know, one of the things, another factor in vaping, other than the substance that they're vaping, is also the mechanism, how hot it gets it. Because if you don't regulate the specific temperature above a certain threshold, that can create a toxic interaction or compound, depending on the chemicals involved, too. It's something that more regulation and more control and testing is going to make it the most safe. And again, I would say to my kids, over my dead body, are you going to like vape recreationally with some of these things? But I would want it to, when kids experiment, to be safe and regulated and tested and as safe as it possibly can be.
Let me go through some of the emails that we've received. Heath called in to say he's very much in support of recreational marijuana legalization so the people who are on medical marijuana don't feel the stigma. Is there a stigma even for those using medical marijuana?
Boy, if there is, I'm sure there are, but I didn't encounter many of them. In fact, if the opposite, medical marijuana is probably done more than anything to help change the hearts and minds of people because they see individuals like, you know, Aunt Betty or folks using cannabis in a way that completely destroys that, you know, the Jeff Spicoli stereotype that it's all just for stoners or Cheech and Chong types. And it's actually something that you go into a medical dispensary in Pennsylvania and it's like going into the Apple store to get a new phone. I don't think there's really any stigma attached to it. Not so, that I've encountered.
I have to smile when you bring up Jeff
Spicoli. Yeah, well, we talked about that. It's like I didn't even have to, you know, stretch to bring
fast
that
times
back
at Ridgemont High. But you see, the thing is, on a more serious note, there are people who that's their stereotype of someone who uses marijuana.
Correct. There's been, you know, go online, Google reefer madness images, and you look at some of the absurdity that they tried to create. Like, you almost think that this can't possibly be real, but that was real. And that was a concerted effort to try to demonize this substance to create prohibition. I call them prohibitionists today because that's what this is. This is no different than an alcohol prohibition, and we all know what a disaster that was, despite alcohol being an incredibly dangerous and damaging substance. It's legal, regulated, taxed, etc. And somebody has to explain it to me like I'm 6 years old, how you can be in support of full legalization of alcohol, but cannabis is a bridge too far when you can drink yourself to death this afternoon, but there's no known documented overdose deaths of cannabis.
Suzanne says, legalizing marijuana would bring this trade above ground, giving better access and quality to people who have concerns or difficulty navigating the current medical marijuana laws. Yvonne just makes the argument you just made. Alcohol is unhealthy. Alcohol causes more health and social issues than marijuana. Beth asks, has the Lieutenant Governor read Alex Berenson's book, Tell Your Children the Truth About Marijuana, Mental Illness, and Violence? Mental illness is a direct link to marijuana. Change in mindset isn't always correct, and crime rates do go up.
No, that's I haven't read it, nor would I, simply because people a lot smarter than I am, scientists that I believe, I think over 100 have signed a letter saying that that's just cherry-picked bunk, for lack of a better phrase. And they talk about young people and uses. Nobody, I didn't encounter a single person, no matter how enthusiastic they are for legal cannabis, suggest that anyone under 21 should ingest it or can smoke it or in any way. So this idea that if you want legal cannabis, you want 14-year-olds to go out and have at it is, again, it speaks to the weakness of their argument, because they try to inject this kind of scare or fear tactic in to make it seem that you're not concerned about children, when it's actually the exact opposite is true, that it is a deep concern for teenagers experimenting, as they've always done throughout time, that if they are, it should be with a safe product and as regulated a product and as pure a product as possible, sold by an organization that isn't selling other illegal substances and God knows what else they're involved in.
Another email. It's important to discuss the health consequences. Any inhalant will damage your lungs. Legalizing will very likely increase use and very likely give people a false sense of security about the dangers, and starting young and lasting a lifetime will no doubt cause enormous health problems.
Opinions are different than fact, and they're entitled to their opinions, but they're not entitled to suggest that legalizing this is going to make anyone more likely to consume it than the fact that I go back to alcohol. Then let's make alcohol illegal. Let's make tobacco illegal. They kill hundreds of thousands of Americans every year. And people are like, oh yeah, no big deal. But suddenly cannabis is a bridge too far. And you look at the massive logical fail in that argument, and I don't know how someone could defend that in a sense of, I'm all for going out and buying a case of beer or a bottle of Jack Daniels, but cannabis is somehow what? And I think that's the legacy of this prohibition mentality that they fomented so deliberately early in the part of last century.
But the point that the listener made, though, about ingesting it or pulling it into your lungs, the American Lung Association does oppose legalization.
Yeah, and I'm not sure why, but if they do, that's their right as an organization to do that. I assume the American Lung Association opposes smoking, right? Is that a safe bet?
I think that's
yeah. I would say so. So, but yet tobacco is legal in any number of forms, and that gets back to the argument. It's like, simply because something is legal does not mean that it is without harm. Or I don't recommend doing cannabis to my children. And I would, but again, not supporting it doesn't make it a case for making it or keeping it illegal.
Mm-hmm. Karen asks, where would recreational marijuana be able to be used? What about people who still need drug tested for their jobs? They can't be around marijuana, so any use in public would be a problem. She's talking about secondhand smoke, I assume.
It's again, no one's advocating for it's the same thing with alcohol. You don't see people walking down the street drinking a beer, or you go into Starbucks and crack open. I mean, this idea.
No, but there are people who are being tested, though, drug tested today. And
there are. And that's why if we make it a legal substance and we have a threshold in your drug test of intoxication or being under the influence as opposed to residual, just no different. If you're a commercial truck driver and you have two beers at night and wake up, nobody thinks you're drunk the next morning. And it's the same thing with cannabis. And the problem right now is that the zero tolerance, like if there's any residual THC compounds in your blood, even though you may have consumed it 20 days ago, It's obviously not impacting your ability to do your job in a safe manner.
Well, apparently some people have thought that it is if they are drug tested.
Well, some people didn't know where, you know, we didn't know where the sun went 1,000 years ago at night. You know, just because you think that doesn't mean that it's actually.
No, but you're giving me a lot of what ifs. But
I'm not giving you any what ifs. I'm giving you, like, you know, actual scientific fact on this. And that's and the point I'm pushing back on is that prohibitionists tried to create this this fear, and they say there's no actual scientific fact or basis for it. And I would turn to them and say, well, then, so you're a prohibitionist for alcohol and tobacco. And they're like, no, it didn't work. It's like, well, how's this working for us either? You know,
Let's see. We have a call from Jim in Enola. Jim, you're on the air.
Hi, Scott. Hi. I wanted to say two things quickly. First, I want to applaud what the lieutenant governor is doing. He's actually emphasizing science. Imagine that. And going out and asking people what they think, as opposed to certain other politicians who are spreading falsehoods and basically, you know, have their heads in the sand. The other thing I want to say is, isn't it kind of interesting that the statewide elected officials in Pennsylvania are mostly in favor of legalization? They're the ones who were elected statewide, but yet our legislature is not in favor of this. Why is that? There is a single word answer, and that is gerrymandering. We have a legislature that does not represent the majority of the populace of Pennsylvania. That's because of gerrymandering. We have to fix gerrymandering if we're going to get things like this passed. So thanks for taking my comment.
Well, Jim brings up another topic, but does he have a point?
Well, I mean, you know, we want to make sure we have the clearest path between the will of the people with who represents them. So any attempts to manipulate that, I mean, it's never a good idea to let the politicians pick the people. The people should be picking the politicians. So, of course, I don't support gerrymandering, whether it would benefit my party either, this idea. Like, I just want the truth. I want where we're at. And I thought the redrawn congressional maps delivered just that. You know, Pennsylvania went 9-9. And I think that's kind of where we're at as a state. You know, we are 9-9. And those are impeccably fair districts, in my opinion.
Will there be people in Pennsylvania who will see this as a single issue? And I mean, the most important issue to them. We know that there are issues like abortion, for example, gun control, that people, that is the most important issue to them, and that's what they base their vote on. Are there people, from your observations, that is that important, that this will be the most important issue for them when voting?
Well, I mean, I think it comes down to personal freedom and responsibility. If I was lobbying to our friends on the other side, they care very deeply about gun rights. But right now, medical cannabis and firearms from a federal level, because it's a Schedule I substance, there's a conflict there. And I ran into people saying, geez, I really could need this, but I don't want to give up my Second Amendment rights. So there are some challenges there. And this idea, I would say to my conservative friends, you care deeply about gun rights and access. And guns, though, are deadly. That's the whole purpose of guns. And you want minimal regulations, but you want maximum regulation and prohibition for a substance that no one's ever overdosed on. How is that? How do you reconcile that? And that's the thing. This idea between legal and harmless just is a false equivalence that prohibitions often will employ to try to scare people into saying that anyone's suggesting for like a wild, wild west, throw it open. But we are surrounded by substances that are dangerous, or things like lawnmowers, or you name it. But can you imagine if lawnmowers were illegal and how people would try to cut their lawns or whatever? Like, you know, you use all kinds of things. But the fact that there's safety regulations and there are, you know, all these things. Legality improves oversight, regulation, and access. And that's spread across all kinds of industries. And I think it's appropriate, and people of Pennsylvania want that for cannabis.
I don't want to get off track, but it is related to marijuana, more on the medical marijuana side. The president judge in Lebanon County, and I believe there are three other counties here in Pennsylvania, where an order has been handed down that those who are on probation or parole are not allowed to use medical marijuana or their parole will be revoked. What are your thoughts on that?
Absurd. Ridiculous. Like, there's, I don't know what else to say about it. Like, it's a legal substance and a medicine to help people. You know, I got a better idea. Let just give them another big bottle of opioids, you know, that, because that worked out just fine, right? You know, like, the fact that these judges would sit there and impose that kind of a condition, it's like, you're on probation for using cannabis illegally, and I'm going to revoke your probation if you use it legally. Well, what are you supposed to do with it? Like, it's insanity.
Reason being, and I'm not going to answer for those judges, but I would assume that the reason is because it is a Schedule I on the federal level.
The reason is that they refuse to apply logic to the circumstance and situation. Like, this simple idea is that, yeah, like, let's talk about the harm that a person's doing to themselves by not using a medicine that their own doctor has prescribed to them, that you as like a local judge would somehow supersede that and re-inject someone back into the criminal justice system at taxpayer expense and an enormous expense to that person and to their family and to their communities is absurd and obscene.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News. And all things regional, I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. Coming up on Monday's show, we're going to be talking about food allergies, something that we hear so much more about today, but that's coming up on Monday's show, so be sure to tune in. Our guest during today's program is Pennsylvania's Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman. We're talking about legalization of marijuana for recreational purposes. 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are @SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number 1-800-729-7532. Let's take a phone call from Brian in Elizabethtown. Brian, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Question for Lieutenant Governor. I don't know if you guys talked about this already. I apologize, but is there an estimated revenue that would be gained from legalizing marijuana for recreational use?
No, but you
haven't. And the second part of my question. Okay.
No, go ahead.
And the second part of that, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm just saying, go right ahead.
Okay. And the second part of that question is, that with that tax revenue, would there be anything in place to help with drug treatment programs, addiction programs? Again, not pointing a finger at marijuana being an addictive drug, even though I've known people who've felt that it is. But it could be maybe used to help people with addiction problems with alcohol, opioids, et cetera. That's my question.
And, you know, we probably should have talked about this right up front, because this is one of the biggest arguments for legalization, is that it will bring in millions of dollars.
Hundreds of millions of dollars.
Well, do you have an idea? Do you have an estimate? I know the Auditor General had one.
Well, I don't put a lot of stock necessarily in that, because that's all theoretical. Let's look at the actual, and that's Colorado. You know, we're roughly twice Colorado's size. I would imagine, somebody can Google fact check me, but we're significantly more people than Colorado. And I think they brought in a couple $100 million a year so far, now that the market's in full maturity, you know. So we're, no matter what, we're talking hundreds of millions of dollars. That we know. Whether it's as high as the Auditor General suggests or whatever, I don't know. But the idea, though, that you're talking about a substantial annuity of hundreds of millions of dollars every year that the legislature could decide to channel those funds to, whether it's helping make our state school system more affordable or public education, you know, in the primary level, or expanding kinder. I mean, whatever it is, infrastructure, fix the damn roads, pot for potholes. Everyone made that joke. Whatever it is. Nobody wants to see it just dumped into the general fund as some kind of like, well, I hope it goes to something good. People want to see that revenue. You know, my tagline is what people told me is, I want cannabis grown on Pennsylvania farms, creating Pennsylvania jobs, producing Pennsylvania tax revenue for Pennsylvania's benefit. That's what people want. And that's up to legislature to decide what those funds would go to.
Do you have a personal opinion on where you'd like to see the money go to? And is this something that you discuss with Governor Wolf?
I certainly do have opinions on that, but my opinions aren't critical on that. The governor's is critical, and members of the legislature would be critical. What I can say is that it would involve some level of compromise based on what Republicans would want to see it go to if they ever got to the point of legal, and what the Democrats would want to see it used for. But I mean, that's a lot of money to leave sitting on the table, or to let some other state have it, or even worse, as it currently is going to the drug lords. Pockets right now.
You bring up a point. Speaking about those who sell what is now illegal, if marijuana is legalized for recreational purposes here in Pennsylvania, those who sell it on the black market, would they face criminal charges of distribution?
Well, it becomes obviously much more complicated. I'm more concerned, and we've actually taken steps to address people that have nonviolent marijuana convictions. And, you know, the governor has called for legislation to expunge people's records. In the absence of that, we have created an aggregated and expedited pardons mechanism to help get those off people's records as well, too, because we found that, virtually unanimously, nobody thinks your record should stop you from getting a better job, better housing, a student loan, or being able to be a better volunteer at your child's school over something as silly as that. You know,
so. Do you see, if this were to happen, that there would be people released from jail who are now behind bars because they have marijuana-related charges?
I certainly don't think there should be anybody in prison right now serving time for straight up cannabis convictions. You know, now if you shot two people in the process, that's a different story. I want to emphasize nonviolent cannabis ones. It's surreal if you consider it, you can get on a plane and go to Nevada and take as much cannabis as you want. But if you bring it back in Pennsylvania, that's illegal. Like, we're still in the same country, and you know, after a 3-hour plane flight. So this suspended reality of, well, it's legal over this border, but it's illegal now. It's like, it's not helpful, and it creates needless victims. And because cannabis illegality, you know, again, no one argues, is disproportionately impacts people in communities of color. It's a fact. It's just one more way for those individuals to be dragged into the criminal justice system. And it's a waste of our resources, but our most precious resources are the lives and records of those that have been tangled up in this needless war of prohibition on cannabis.
Let's take a phone call from Mark in Lancaster. Mark, you're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call. Lieutenant Governor's arguments have a lot of flaws in them. You know, he says, well, you know, tobacco is legal, and I don't see him, you know, trying to make that illegal. The United States government has been trying to get less people to use tobacco. In 1964, when the Surgeon General first put warning, this may be hazardous to your health, on every pack of cigarettes, to now, smoking rates have gone down from 43% to 18%.
Yeah, and vaping has all but supplanted that as well, too,
but before vaping, it went from 43 to 18% before vaping. Mm-hmm. And so what they did was they tried to get rid of it. They're trying to tax the heck out of it. Now, one could say, well, you know, look at the tax money that the tobacco brings in from every pack of cigarettes. Yeah, while it does, the social ills caused from that are 10 times greater than the revenue brought in. Just like you can make the case, well, casinos bring money in. And I'll tell you, for every dollar the casino money makes, brings in, you're going to pay out $5 for social ills.
Okay, Mark, so, I'm running out of time. Is your main point?
So my main point is this should stay illegal. I mean, if you look at Denver, Colorado,
Let's make tobacco illegal. It kills hundreds of thousands of people every year. Let's make it illegal. Will you join me in making tobacco illegal? Will you join me in making alcohol illegal?
That people don't do it. Look,
will you join me in making alcohol illegal?
Let him make his point, Lieutenant Governor.
Let me make my point if you would, please. I mean, I don't want somebody stoned to the gills driving next to me.
So then you support banning alcohol then?
Yeah. All right. Mark, thank you very much, because I am running out of time. I think we get his point. Is he supports keeping it illegal. He opposes making it legal. But the point he brought up, and we do have a few emails here, without a test for intoxication, how are police expected to keep roadways safe with legalization of recreational marijuana? Well, Colorado,
there is technology for that. There was a great article in the Inquirer that there is a breathalyzer of sort for cannabis.
Okay, but one thing that Colorado has experienced, and I don't know whether Colorado's czar talked about this yesterday.
He did, and he said that that was more of a factor of new ways to measure it and a new accounting method that they to track it. It's one of those cherry-pick facts.
But let me interrupt for just a second, because what I want to do is provide context for people. What we're talking about is that there have been more fatal crashes in Colorado over the last 6 years where marijuana was found in the system. Now, go ahead. What were you going to say about
that? What I'm saying is that I haven't encountered any cannabis advocate that says, I want you to use this irresponsibly, everybody. It's again, it gets back to that because it's legal that it's somehow harmless. This idea that you are going to forget the fact that you shouldn't drive high. No one is out there advocating drive high or goes any more than you're advocating to drink and drive. You know, using this responsibly is, you know, like, you know, how many deaths are there rises in people texting while driving? Well, let's ban cell phones then. You know, I mean, this idea that, you know, you have an obligation to use your phone responsibly, that and to have public information campaigns to say, put down your phone and drive. To the caller's point, it's like, it's a good thing to drive down and smoking rates. That's a good thing. No one's encouraging anybody by making it legal to use cannabis. It's letting people and adults consume it if they choose in a safe, legal, regulated, and taxed manner.
But the point I think he also was making, and some people have made, is that why legalize another product that we know could have some detrimental effects on people's health and safety?
Well, it's that market already currently exists. It's a black market, and the dangers now are that the money goes to drug lords that create all kinds of problems. And they say, well, it's a gateway drug. It's like, yeah, it's a gateway drug because the guy that's selling you cannabis probably has a whole slew of other illicit substances that are dangerous and that are addictive. So this idea that there is going to be nothing but positive developments for cannabis legalization, no one's arguing that. It really comes down to name one substance that's legal right now that you would make illegal, like whether it's alcohol, tobacco, etc., because they're dangerous.
We only have a few minutes left. Let's take one more call. Kiera from Glen Rock. Kiera, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call.
Yes, you're welcome.
I have two comments. One, the original reason why cannabis was illegal was William Randall Hearst's paper wars. He did not want to compete with hemp mills because hemp paper was cheaper. So he had timber that he owned, and that's why they needed to make it criminal. But before the 30s, everybody had it. It was in pharmacies. I get frustrated, like even now listening to the callers, you don't have to smoke it. I don't use cannabis because I don't. But I have friends who are veterans that have PTSD, and they take tinctures.
We saw that all over the state, where veterans are denied it by the VA because it's a Schedule I substance. And they are like, that's outrageous. You know, I defended this country and was harmed as a result. And this country calls me a criminal by using the product that or the substance that makes me feel normal again. And you're absolutely right, you know. And I would just say.
And then they get it. Oh, I'm sorry. Then they get it in an illegal way, and then they get arrested.
That's my point. And, hey, you know, CBD became legal, and the world didn't spin off its axis.
And I want to talk about CBD sometime on another show. Kiera, I have to cut you off. Thank you very much. We only have a minute left. Obviously, it's an issue, I mean, as you found around the state, and even from our callers and listeners today, that people very much care about. So I kind of listed that earlier, that you support. Governor supports, Attorney General, Auditor General supports, but the legislature, for the most part, since there's a Republican majority, do not support. What happens next?
Well, I don't know. I just would hope that the conversation continues, and what someone might say in public is different than what somebody might say in private. And for a long time, medical marijuana was a bridge too far in Pennsylvania. And you know what? They did a great job with it. And you know what? The world didn't spin off its axis, you know? And in fact, it's actually helped a lot of people.
Are you saying there's Republican members who probably would support it privately, but maybe not vote that way?
Absolutely. Or they need to figure it out, you know, because again, a majority of Republicans support it too. So this idea that, you know, it's simply not true. And you know, I say cannabis is a bipartisan subject. It really is.
Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman, always enjoy having you on the program. Thanks very much.
Thanks for having me on. Where did the hour go?
I know. Coming up on Monday, we talk about food allergies. That's coming up on Monday Smart Talk. Have yourself a good weekend.